This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Welcome to DreamPod number 5, and I have a very exciting event for you because we have an excellent American guest on. So since I'm hosting the podcast, that means this is going to be the all-American DreamPod number 5, as we finally cut the dead weight from across the Pacific Ocean, and we keep on going with the good old USA.
Whoa.
You mean Atlantic.
Whoa.
Wait, somebody didn't study geography at school.
You guys are still here.
Yes.
We are indeed.
Oh, no, it's not good.
Yeah. All right, Caleb's knowledge of geography does not represent all Americans. I'd like to put that out there.
People are going to think that I said that on purpose. I was trying to make a joke there, and I don't think people are going to get that it was a joke. Oh, boy. Anyways, we're here with an amazing guest, Adam Korlick from YouTube fame.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing today?
I'm not bad. This is fun. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you very much for coming down. And we also have the rest of our crew. My name is Caleb. I am the American broadcast journalist for the Dreamcast Junkyard and the DreamPod. And we also have Tommy.
Hello.
And we also have Gaz/Lost Rune.
Good evening.
And so today we're going to just ask our special guests some questions, and we're going to try to focus on the Dreamcast console. Speaking of the Dreamcast, Adam Korlick, what was your history with the console? Like, when did you get your first DC?
I got mine September 9th, 1999, launch day. Basically, it was just that summer of 99 before the console came out. I saw all the ads and everything. I just got totally pumped, and then I had to pre-order it, and I got it right away. And it was love at first sight.
Was it the ad with the Sonic running away from the whale?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. That first ad where they're like inside the console.
Oh, yeah. I know which one you mean. Yeah.
I remember I think that one really did it.
The one where the kid was playing the game and then like he said, oh, that worked before. And like the console like figured out what he was doing and like changed the way it played.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right. Plus all the magazine ads. I mean, when magazines were still a thing, you know.
How far before the actual console launched were you kind of aware of its existence? For me, I was very much sort of looking at the Japanese launch and thinking, when's it going to come? When's it going to come out in the UK? I mean, was that the same for you? Or
no, because, I mean, I don't know, how old was I at that point? I must have been in like the seventh grade. I mean, internet wasn't super common yet, so the only information I would get would come out of magazines and, you know, friends and stuff. So I think the first time I heard about it was towards early 99. So I think that was a really rough year because every day I was like, where is it?
When you bought the launch unit, what games did you have at launch?
The only game I had at launch was Sonic Adventure.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
It is. I love that game. But the thing about it was that I actually didn't do much with the Dreamcast initially. Like that first year I had Sonic Adventure, it wasn't until the holidays that year I got NBA Showtime on NBC. And then I don't think I really got another game until the thing was discontinued. And then I was just getting tons of them. Yeah, it was. Wow. You wouldn't expect that because I've got the full set now. But at the time I was just like, yeah, I like it, but I don't know what to play on it.
Yeah, but there was a brief period of time, right around 2002 to 2007, where you could just find Dreamcast games for super cheap everywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and it was when I got my console. I got it right around the end of 2002, and man, there's just so many games from closeout stores and whatnot.
Yeah, there was a Toys R Us by me that was still selling them brand new until like 2008.
Yeah, well, I suppose at that point the console had literally died, hasn't it? And then all this excess stock. So they're going to try and get rid of them. The best way to get rid of them, sell them cheap.
Yeah, that's what I did. I ended up eventually getting the full set. I mean, plus, by the time that stuff was all being discontinued, we had that big, you know, financial crash, so stuff was even cheaper.
Yeah.
Adam, by full set, do you mean the American full set, or is it the full set for everything?
I have all 248 American releases, plus all the European exclusives, all the stuff that was released there that wasn't released here, and then all the Japanese stuff that wasn't released in Europe or North America. The Japanese stuff was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, but I mean, we will come back in a bit and speak about your collection more in depth, but really we just wanted to start get a feel for your history with the machine first before we kind of jumped into that kind of thing. It's interesting you mentioned the advertising, because we in the UK had a completely different advertising campaign. It was nothing like the... the American campaign was fantastic. The whole It's Thinking and the 9999. Over here, the tagline was up to 6 billion players, which obviously wasn't true because not 6 billion people had a Dreamcast. Yeah.
I suppose at that point, I don't think it was 6 billion people on the earth, was it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that happened right around then. But not all of them were in Europe. Plus, no, you guys advertised on, you know, football jerseys. I said it correctly for you.
You did. Thank you. Much appreciated.
No problem.
Yeah, so there was the whole 6 billion players, which the Advertising Standards Authority stepped into because
they not surprised, kind of
saw it and thought, wait a minute, that's not right. So they basically told Sega to stop using that. But yeah, the whole It's Thinking campaign was really successful in the US because wasn't the Dreamcast launch sort of the most successful console launch of all time when that happened?
At the time, yes. I think it was only trumped by, and I'm sad to say it, but the Wii.
Right.
I think eventually, took it down. But up until then, yeah.
What a gimmick on the Wii.
Yeah, we could... why even acknowledge it?
I still remember the whole thing when I did the... when I did the whole video showcasing that dude in his shorts that was showing that he made something like pretty much exactly the same as the Wii for the Dreamcast. That was back in the day.
The guy from Midway, right?
There was a dude who basically said that he had like the idea of having like a light gun attached to like a... accelerometer that was basically like the Wii thing, and then the Wii used some of those patents and stuff like that.
See, we could be referring to the same thing. I just remember a guy who worked at Midway at around 2000 was using Dreamcast fishing controllers for the same thing and was just showing it off and supposedly was claiming the Wii ripped him off.
Yeah, it's probably the same guy.
Yeah, right on. I'm kind of glad they didn't do that. I mean, yeah, it would have been successful, but it would have, what a cost. Its soul would have been eaten.
Indeed.
I'm not a fan of motion controls.
No, me neither. Not certainly not on the the Kinect is pretty poor.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, the only thing, I mean, I've got a Kinect on the Xbox One. I only use the voice activated thing. I don't play any games with it.
Well, even Phil Spencer just said it was useless for games.
Yeah. Just use it to the voice thing. It's just easier just to go, hello, Xbox, do this. And it does it. It's fantastic. But that's about the stretch for it, really.
Yeah, I like it for Skype. That's about it.
Yeah.
One other thing, just going back to the Dreamcast launch, is that this is going to sound really weird, and I'm like some kind of stalker or something, but I did a little bit of research into the guy who got the very first Dreamcast that was available for the US public. His name is Ryan, I don't know how you pronounce it, I think it's Ontiveros, in San Jose. And he was the first person to buy a Dreamcast. So if he's listening to this, please get in touch because I want to ask what happened to that Dreamcast.
What up, Ryan?
Yeah.
Yes, Ryan.
So Ryan, if you're listening, get in touch.
You're famous on the junkyard.
How could that end up being the first one? It's on the West Coast.
I've no idea, but I mean, I've looked into a couple of different articles and apparently he was the first person to get one. He was sort of treated as like a minor celebrity by Sega. He was in a couple of different photo shoots and things.
Man, I'm having a hard time believing that because they had units out in the summer, you know, at like video rental stores. So okay. Are we not counting those?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's just literally having one to actually buy rather than to sort of rent.
That's so weird. I'm not saying you're wrong because I've just never heard that.
I probably am wrong.
That story is full of holes. That's all I'm saying. You know, yeah. It defies geography. It defies the whole rental thing. I'm saying Sega planted that guy. They had to.
He's a mole.
He would have to be. Nothing about it makes sense. Sure, he comes out of the same state that Sega's based in. Come on.
Oh, wow. See, this is why we wanted you on the show. You're throwing a spanner into the works already.
I'm tearing down the walls.
Yeah. The junkyard's a ruin.
Junkyard's a junkyard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, then. Sorry. With your YouTube series, Keep On Dreaming. When did you start it, and did you expect it to become become a like a you know popular YouTube thing?
I started it in 2009, and no, I did not expect anyone to watch. I'm still amazed that anyone does. I one day I just kind of got a bug up my ass. I was like, oh, I should film some of these things for the internet. I don't know why. And I, no shit, man. Like I made like the first 50 episodes in like 3 days. Cause I was just like, oh, I'll just take this controller. I'll talk about it for a few minutes, easily edit it together, put it up on the internet. And you know, cause that's where everybody puts their video feces. And then, and I was amazed that some of them started getting linked in different places because people were like, well, where else am I going to find a review of this obscure Mad Catz controller? And somehow that ended up being a thing. And then the problem was that I burned through my inventory way too quickly and I just kind of ran out of physical things to talk about. I was going to do games, but around the time I was about ready to start doing stuff with games, that's when Sega started, you know, going after people with Shining Force videos and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then I started thinking, like, yeah, maybe I should just stay away from that until they sort that out. Then they eventually did, and I kind of just never went back.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guilty of using your videos as, like, research, for research purposes. Sure. Even recently, I'd got a Dream Eye, and when I was looking into the history of the Dream Eye and things for the article I was writing, your video was one of the things I looked at because the one you've got is the one that comes with the Divers 2000. Am I right?
Yep. I actually don't have the regular one. I only have the Divers 2000 one.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I kind of differentiate the fact that there was two different versions because the one I have is the standalone, which is the sort of the creamy colored and the blue, whereas you have the green, the translucent green one.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask this then. Well, I mean, what was the purpose of starting the channel anyway? Were you just bored one day? I thought, oh, no, I'll just talk about this.
All right. So I went through film school, and I wanted to do film-related projects. And I thought, all right, well, I've got nothing going on because I used to be doing a lot of short films. And I just kind of thought, well, you know, you should kind of keep flexing that muscle a little bit and wait till the next project comes up. And then somehow the video feces ended up becoming the project. And I was like, all right, cool. People like this. I'll just keep doing this. This is way easier.
Yeah. I did the same thing because I got my degree in broadcast, television. And basically, I was working at a TV station. And that's when I started doing the whole Dreamcast Junkyard thing. Because basically, I was just a control room operator. So I just sat there from 4 a.m. until noon watching dials, basically. So I ended up doing a bunch of videos because, you know, once you start editing videos, in somewhere, you just want to kind of keep on doing that. And I kept on doing stuff like that up until, you know, I had to get a real job as a librarian. And then I kind of stopped doing it. But now I'm back because I'm bored again.
Hey, welcome.
Yeah, welcome back.
I'm looking forward to doing my second video game review. The one that I did on D2 is, I think, my most popular video I've ever done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Plus the one where I'm jumping around using the fishing controller to play Soul Calibur. That's a popular one as well.
Cool.
I just stopped after that. And so, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know if YouTube, you can really jump on there anymore like you used to be able to.
No, it's definitely changed.
Yeah, there's also a question to say. I mean, I've got a YouTube channel, but I rarely use it, to be fair. It's, I don't know, not for me. And I don't really watch YouTube because I don't have the time, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, Adam, I don't know how you feel. Basically, if you go onto YouTube and type Adam and then K, your name actually comes up in the search window automatically.
Isn't that weird?
I mean, how does it feel to like be a YouTube kind of celebrity? You know, because I can imagine if you're walking down the street, no one really knows who you are. But then as soon as you go onto YouTube or in the internet in general, type Dreamcast and then the letter A and your name comes up. So you are now kind of synonymous with the Dreamcast.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I did not think that would ever be my identity.
Yeah, I just checked. Yeah, you're actually on the first page of results if you look up Dreamcast in YouTube. It's Adam Kerholik.
Kerholik. No, it's weird. I did get recognized on the street though once. That was truly a mind fuck.
Oh wow.
But, that was really weird. But no, it's bizarre. I never ever thought that I would become associated with my favorite video game console, though there are worse things, that you could be associated with. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, you've become the beacon for the Dreamcast community on YouTube inadvertently.
yeah You guys love me over there in the UK. I got recognized a bunch of times over there.
Mm.
That was weird.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that.
I was there in, summer 2014, and every, like, game store I would go to, there was at least one person who'd be like, it's the Figure It Out guy. And it was bizarre. Over here, that never happens. But over there, I don't know what.
Did you get asked to sign anything? Did you get for an autograph or anything like that?
Ever or over there?
Just over here, yeah.
There, I was asked for a couple of selfies.
Really?
I don't think I signed anything. I got asked to sign a Dreamcast up in Canada.
Nice.
Yeah, no, that's about it.
And did you do it?
Of course.
Cool.
I actually said, "Why do you want me to ruin your Dreamcast?" And the guy was like, it's yellowed. It's fine.
Have you ever been kind of contacted by Sega on any, like, it's official, for any official
reasons?
I get
contacted by developers all the time, but not Sega.
It's a shame.
Sega doesn't really make games anymore, dude.
No.
Do they care?
That's true. Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, the big thing that is on the YouTube is people love your videos because, you know, I think, well, number one, I think you're the only guy who really talks about the HDMI setup. For setting up a the VGA box to the HDMI adapter and whatnot, but just your general collection. If you just want to talk about some of the stuff you own, and some of the the dev kits and whatnot.
Sure, the plethora of shit that I get for talking about HDMI setup on the Dreamcast is astounding. Like, there are people that get actually angry that I would do that, and it's like, what the hell?
Wait, they get angry? Do they think there's a better way to do it?
No, they don't. They're like, you should use a PC emulator. I'm like, do you not get that the whole point is to not do that? No, they don't. Like, I get a lot of shit for stuff like that. It's amazing what people will find a reason to get angry about. I'm sure there's a guy in the comments right now raging that I even brought up that people rage about things. It happens.
It shouldn't surprise me, given, like, what a kind of cesspool the YouTube comments are. But it's so weird because, like, you're doing nothing except, like, helping people, like, have Shenmue be in the best quality possible on a TV, you know?
Some people will go to the extremes of making, like, response videos about how wrong I am with no real explanation. It's fun, but it's
yeah, some people are just born to just complain, though, aren't they? Let's be honest.
I'm one of them. And that's all I'm doing, if you really think about it. I'm just complaining right now.
I think what that particular video where you do explain the HD, how to basically get HD picture out of your Dreamcast was I think it was one of the first videos of yours I actually saw.
Yeah, I think that's still my most popular one. Yeah, I could have, in hindsight, I could have done that video better.
I think with the earlier videos that you did, it is the way that they're shot that actually makes them so appealing. Just because
that's because you don't have to see me, so it's enjoyable.
There is that, but
thank you.
Just kick him while he's down, Tom.
It's the way because, like, for example, it's just like your hands, and you're just kind of like gesticulating to the camera with your hands, you know, and it's just I find it really like. Funny, basically, and the way you just kind of are so sort of self-depreciating with these hand gestures, and then, you know, I just think it's really good, and yeah, I think a lot of people have maybe seen that and then taken it on themselves. I know I certainly have with my, like, 20 viewed videos. So,
yeah, you know, it's not the first time I've heard that. It's very flattering. I mean, there's a combination of a few reasons why that is. I would love to claim that was, like, an artistic choice that I made, that it was just smart. The only smart thing about that was that I was like, well, I want them to focus more on the item than on me.
Yeah.
But the reasons my hands are moving around so much is I get jacked up on a lot of coffee before I film anything. And
yeah.
The other reason for that angle was simply that at the time I was using a camera that had no focusing capabilities. So it was at a fixed lens, so it could only go to a certain distance.
Yeah.
So I had to shoot at a very specific angle for anyone to even see anything. And then after that, it became just like the recognized and identified shot. And I was like, all right, sure. Let's roll with it.
Did your hands become more famous than you? People would be looking at your hands. I know them hands.
Sign
my hands.
That actually has happened a lot. That's why eventually I got jealous of my own hands and I started changing up the format so that you're like, no, you're going to have to watch me now. No, my eyes are up here, buddy.
So I had a quick question. All the dev kits and the sound creator tools that you own, like, I couldn't think of a use for any of those things. Is that a purely collector's item, or would anybody be able to use that for anything?
All right. Well, okay. Depends on some of the items would have some function. Like the dev kits, you could, if you want to, you could play them as actual consoles. You can put hard drives in them. You can put games on them and run them that way. Though with things like the GDMU out now, it's kind of pointless. Some of that stuff, I have no idea really what it does. Like from a hardware, like I could tell you the basics, like this, they use this for sound programming. How they did that is beyond me, but yeah, most of it's just kind of a collector's item. Actually, most of it came from the UK.
Really?
Yeah, I have a buddy over there named Raymond who had all that stuff, and he just couldn't keep it space-wise. He just couldn't. He didn't have the room for it, so he basically just donated it all to me.
No, fair enough. It's gone to a good home.
Yeah, it's safe here.
On that subject, on the Facebook page, maybe about a month ago, I mentioned that I was thinking about, or I was looking at trying to contact maybe an archivist from Sega who maybe would have access to all this stuff, and somebody who used to work at Sega who follows the site on the page was like, oh, mm-hmm. There's no way, you know. And he then regaled us with this tale of when Sega Europe was like pulling the plug on the Dreamcast, they were basically taking stuff down to a rubbish tip, basically, and throwing it away. And some of the stuff that he has in his collection, such as dev kits, like the same as that you have, they were literally throwing them into a tip. Because nobody wanted them, so people were just grabbing what they could and taking it.
That's a crime against humanity.
Exactly. And I was just so shocked that they would have this kind of this mentality where they didn't think how in the future this might be actually like worth something to somebody or the fans or whoever. But no, we're just going to get rid of it.
That's the thing. They don't, though, do they? I mean, at the time, they just want to get rid of everything. I mean, look. I mean, we spoke to someone recently at an expo. An artist, and loads of his stuff was chucked out. It's ridiculous. And now it's just part of history is gone. I mean, just imagine if nobody had saved them.
Yeah.
The other thing that I do know about them is that they're basically useless as far as software programming, because they require, like, you have to be connected via Windows 98 to get them to do anything. Yeah. And yeah, like a lot of people bitch at me on those videos in particular about, oh, you shouldn't have them. They should be in the hands of, you know, talented programmers. And I'm just like, dude, not only is that not really legal, it's also totally financially unviable. Like people think that – you'd be amazed, man. Go read some of those comments on some of those videos. The amount of people that think that I am simply the one thing blocking them from, say, Shenmue 3 or Sonic Adventure 3 is insane. Like they're like, you just have all the machines there. If you just turn them all on, Shenmue 3 comes out. Why haven't you done that?
Why, Adam? Why?
I'm just like – God, there's
that damn Adam Korolik. If it wasn't for Korolik, we'd already have Shenmue 3.
There is a couple of people who have accused me of that.
Wow.
Now, if you are listening, to it. Them people. Oh.
Tisk tisk. No, it's. I mean, like I said in there, I'm not a programmer, but I do know you can't just turn them on and games come out. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. There was one interesting thing that you showed in one of your videos, which is the sound. No, it wasn't the sound creation thing. It was the. It's the thing that's got Sega Saturn ports on it, and it's also got the VMU things on the top that are different connectors.
Yeah, what I do know about that is that it uses a different type of port, because at one time a different prototype of the VMU was going to communicate through those. And apparently at one point the Dreamcast was going to use Saturn controllers, possibly and probably for backwards compatibility reasons. But anyone's guess is as good as anyone else's. That's
fascinating, yeah. And on the subject of the VMU, there's another video that you did for, I think, was it called the Double Power VMU Cloner?
Something like that. You're talking about videos I haven't watched in over 5 years.
Okay, no problem.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, that little device seems really sort of bizarre, and it's still actually available because I Googled it, and the company that created it, from Hong Kong, I believe, still sell it through their website. Yeah. And it's like a thing you can put two VMUs in and you can copy uncopyable files.
Yeah, I actually think that's a very useful device for that reason. It allows you to take the VMUs and communicate with a PC, but also have, like you said, files transfer between VMUs where the Dreamcast refuses to do that. Protected ones, it just says, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's also a really good way to, if you've unlocked those extra like 41 blocks in the VMU, on one card, you can just clone that card over a bunch of times, and you don't have to unlock it every single time.
What's that? Sorry, I'm not familiar with that. Unlocking.
You didn't know about that?
No.
So the Dreamcast VMUs have 200, you know, blocks of save space. Sega left some extra memory in there for future firmware updates, but they never used it. So if you go in and unlock it, you'll end up with 241 free blocks.
Wow.
You didn't know
that? No. And how do you do this?
Check out the video.
No, you don't have to do that. I'll save you the time. There's a software. There's some software. I think it's called Dream Explorer.
Okay, yeah, I'm familiar with
that.
If
you look it up, it's like a web browser type of thing. Yeah. It's got a whole bunch of different functions. You can burn that, run it on your Dreamcast, and one of the options will be to unlock those files on your memory card.
Wow.
Just make sure the memory card's blank before you do that because it's going to format it.
Okay, which is the software with the wolf on it that had all the different saves that you could just transfer to a VMU once you burned onto a CD?
Is that VMU tool?
Possibly. You could be talking about Psilocybin Dreams or whatever that is.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
When I was running tournaments and I did the whole like tournament thing at the library, I used one of those to unlock all the characters for all the fighting games and whatnot.
Yeah. I did the same with Metropolis Street Racer to unlock the free roam explore mode, so you can just literally drive around the city. Wherever you want to go.
I did that with Sonic Adventure 2, so you could play that 3D remake of the first level.
Ah, I've heard of this, but I've never actually seen it. There's no footage online or anything. So it's basically, is it Green Hill Zone that they've recreated?
This the first level of Green Hill Zone completely remade for Sonic Adventure 2.
Right, I need to find this because I want to see that. I've heard of it.
Get the double power, get all this shit, and you can play it yourself.
Get all this shit.
Easy as 127.
You have like a lot of really rare games and unusual stuff. Does anything kind of stand out right now in your collection as far as like really rare games or unusual items?
Yeah, there's one I've got a definite story about. So the rarest game on the console is probably a game called stick with the pronunciation because I don't know how well it is. Grauen no Torikagu Capital 6 Senritsu. Now, yeah, right?
Yeah,
that is a mouthful.
Wow.
Now, that's a 6-part series that was essentially a series of FMV games that only came out in Japan, and they were all sold only through Sega Direct. The sixth one is the hardest one to find. Apparently, they were only like some 200, 300 copies ever made or sold. And these games are worthless because you have to beat the first one to connect to even start the next one. And all six of them require a connection to some server at Sega, which of course doesn't exist anymore. So they're the rarest coasters in the world.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I have seen the video that you showed those particular games on. And I think you mentioned also that, Planet Ring was another game.
Planet Ring
is back online now, I believe.
I heard.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
But, this one isn't, I take it. Yeah.
I doubt it. I mean, who other than like me and now the three of you, who knows? Who even knows those games exist? You know?
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
It's true.
The thing is that they're totally unplayable to a Western audience. They're in hardcore Japanese, and it's like a murder mystery story that's spanned over six discs. It's a typical Sega idea that's crazy and ballsy, but makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of games like that, and especially Japanese releases where, you know, like the dating simulators and all that kind of thing that came out sort of towards the end of the Dreamcast life and afterwards as well, where everyone was just kind of jumping on board and releasing all this kind of shovelware.
Dude, I hate those date sims so much because if you're going for a full set, you have to get those. But there's no worse feeling than actually putting down money on Orange Pocket. You know, weird, stupid games you know you'll never play. Ever 17, The End of Infinity, and all these other ridiculous ones that I don't know where they – like they use a Google Translate function to try and make a title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny actually. I mean, I've got pretty much the entire PAL collection now, but I've recently started buying Japanese and US games that weren't released here, and there are quite a few that you think to yourself, this would have been a perfect game for the sort of the PAL market. Why wasn't it released? Things like Armada, you know, Bang Gunship Elite, Matt Hoffman's BMX, even things like that we didn't get. And it's just, who thought that, you know, a British or a French or an Australian gamer wouldn't want to play Matt Hoffman's BMX? You know, why was it only released in the US?
Because we didn't want to in America.
Well, this is true, but you see what I'm saying. You know, you get the point I'm trying to make. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I just like to be difficult. Yeah, no, yeah, I completely get it. It's, but hey, you guys won. You got Shenmue 2, so.
Yeah.
We also got Headhunter, and.
You got Rez, Headhunter, and Shenmue 2. You won the war. You know?
Isn't Shenmue 2 in Japanese with subtitles? Is it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. So, yeah, I forget it's been that long since I played it.
The whole thing with Shenmue 2 was that it was, wasn't it because Microsoft got the rights for the Xbox version?
All right, so that's a really convoluted story. Do we want to go into this?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, okay. So Sega of America was then run by a guy named Peter Moore, and Peter Moore was basically greasing the wheels to get himself a job with Microsoft. And he basically decided to, while he was still with Sega, to cancel the Dreamcast release in North America and say, oh, we're going to focus on the Xbox and our third-party development now. And then he gave them that, and then suddenly he became an employee at Microsoft.
Wow.
As if nobody would notice. He basically, you know, sold us out.
Bribed his way
in. Himself a better job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's about it.
That's mean.
Now, speaking about weird video games on the Dreamcast, back in, 2006, I believe, I downloaded a game called Divvy Dead, and I didn't know what it was. it turned out to be like a, kind of like a translated, horror mystery game. And I played that game for a good 45 minutes, until I found out it was an adult game.
Yeah, it's like a hentai game, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know how the you pronounce this. E-Rogue or E-Go. I don't know.
Good effort.
But in any case, there's a whole series of games like that. And this is one that was kind of released on a bunch of different consoles. And it's just funny because, like, when you look at the Korlik, you actually look at your collection video, this is prominently placed on the shelf.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty funny considering that I felt a little bit stupid for downloading and printing off a game like that. And it's just right there on your shelf.
Yeah, no, I it's one of the few games that was seemed to be a completely finished game that never got released that did get leaked onto the internet. Whether it was an unreleased Japanese game or if it was like a fan-made game, I don't know. But there's a small section in that collection that is just for releases like that, like, you know, Flintstones, Viva Rock Vegas, and Propeller Arena, stuff that was finished but only saw its way onto the internet. And I don't know if Divvy Dead was actually an official thing or not. I'm leaning towards it probably wasn't. But at the time I burned it, I didn't know. I just put it in the most convenient area. And then it ended up being in the video, and a couple people were like, I saw it. Such as yourself.
I've never heard of Divvy Dead. Can you explain what the game's like? How does it play?
It's basically it's a visual novel,
okay.
And you basically and there's no indication for about 45 minutes that it's going to be an erotic game at all. You're basically running around, kind of like doing like a murder mystery type thing. I don't remember much about the game. I played it for a long time, but I like you know I looked at it and it's like all I remember is like the librarian did a terrible job of keeping books, and I was like super pissed at that. And other than that, is like a lot of like incredibly violent scenes and whatnot. So you got a lot of that. But really, no, nothing like sexual at all for the first 45 minutes. I don't know like who that market is for, really.
Japanese.
Yes, Japanese market.
It's all hentai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, really just, big, isn't it, over there? Just searching for Divvy Dead now.
It's huge over there, exactly. Isn't it? The hentai.
Yeah, just search out of curiosity. Yeah. For educational purposes.
Oh, yeah.
But as I recall, the cover art actually is like a naked cartoon, is it not?
No, the cover art that I had was not. There's a custom Dreamcast cover art that does have the nakedness on it. But I remember specifically the cover art that I found for it. Like, there was nothing, like, it was PG-13. There was nothing that, you know, it didn't scream out, oh, this is one of those games.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, it's not that odd. If you look at a lot of those later Japanese Dreamcast releases, a lot of them are just weird date sims and stuff like that. I mean...
Oh yeah, the weird what was it? The Neon Genesis Evangelion one with the mouse controller.
There's three of those.
I only know the one that comes with the mouse controller.
Yeah, one comes with a mouse, one comes with a keyboard, and I don't remember what the other one comes with. They're in the other room.
Adam, quickly, I just wanted to ask as well what your opinion is of like sort of homebrew games and sort of the new things that are coming soon. You know, like Elysian Shadows and that kind of thing.
So you mean independent?
Yeah. Indie game.
Because homebrew is.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of got a bit confused.
All right, so
there.
Homebrew. No, it's cool. I want to clarify that because I know a lot of people screw that up. I've done it myself. Homebrew is like guy makes a game. He's like, hey, everybody, go ahead and download it, burn it on a CDR or whatever. Independent games are, you know, like completed games. They get like pressed releases. Most recently, I think it was Alice's Mom's Rescue for the Dreamcast. I really support that scene. I think that is amazing that we were fortunate enough to get that. If you're into the Dreamcast, yeah. To be like, oh, it's 2015, and here's our next release is. I like that the Dreamcast is still alive in like a really zombie-like way. When you think about all of its contemporary competitors, PS2, Xbox, GameCube, all long dead. Sure, Dreamcast doesn't have official support, but the fact that we can still buy new properties for it at this point in time is something.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I recently acquired a copy of Stormwind, and I've never played it before, and that game blew my mind because I've recently been playing a lot of Soldner on the PS Vita. And to put this disc mm-hmm. into my Dreamcast and play a game that looked so visually stunning. I mean, I know it came out in 2013, but I'd never played it since, you know. And then just to be blown away by this graphically impressive shoot 'em up, I was like, wow, this is brilliant. You know, what else is going to come?
Well, yeah, especially on a console that's a few generations old.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Stormwind is probably the most technically impressive of all of the independent games. Like, no disrespect to the others, but it's probably the one that could most stand up as being believed to be something that came out back in the heyday of the console.
Yeah.
Like, something you would have bought retail, because it looks very legit. Not to say the others don't, but, like, you look at Alice's Mom's Rescue, as much as I love that game, it's not something you would believe probably came out to store shelves back in 2001, 2002. But you could believe
it. It's funny, actually, we compare in Stormwind and Alice's Mum's Rescue because they both started life on the Atari Jaguar, didn't they? I mean, Stormwind started as native. Yeah,
it's true.
It did, yeah.
It's true, no. Tom's mentioned the Jaguar.
Shut up, guys.
I don't believe it.
Hey, I'm one of the few people on the internet who did a video defending the Jaguar, so I want to hear you out.
Hell yeah. I'm fist bumping you now.
Hell yeah. The Jaguar, it's not that bad. That's about the best you can say.
Yeah, that's probably about right. I did buy one, and then it didn't last that long.
I just had the Jaguar. I didn't have the actual CD version.
Very few did.
Yeah, I mean, I think they only made 20,000 of them, didn't they, in total? So.
I've heard 10,000, 20,000. It's always some low-end number. I have a real hard time believing, and that's true, though, because I've seen that thing enough on eBay to be like, come on.
Yeah, there's another rumor that they actually, Atari ordered another 20,000 to be created, and they were, but then they were just, like, sort of left in a shipping container or something. So
throwing in a skip. Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me. Atari did a lot of weird-ass shit.
The old toilet seat CD.
Yeah. It's interesting, mm-hmm. though, just on this subject again, Adam. I mean, obviously you are famous for your Dreamcast productions, but you collect systems, games for, you know, of other types.
Yeah, and you do videos, mm-hmm. videos. It's not specifically Dreamcast. I mean, you've got a wide, broad range, haven't you?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Apart from the Dreamcast, which other systems are you, like, massively into, would you say?
Collecting-wise?
Yeah.
The Saturn.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was a console I completely missed growing up. Like, I somehow had never heard of it when I was younger. Like, I had a Genesis, aka Mega Drive, as you guys know it. Mm-hmm. It should have been called the Mega Drive. I'm going to admit it. It should have been the Mega Drive. We had trademark issues, whatever. I had a Genesis growing up. And then Sega, as far as I was concerned, kind of, like, went away. Like, I didn't know what happened to them. I had a PlayStation. I had N64. And then all of a sudden, they came back with Dreamcast. And then it wasn't until years later I found out, wait a minute, they had another console in between? And so I kind of looked into it, and I don't know, I've kind of had a soft spot for it and been collecting for it a lot.
That is really sort of eye-opening. That just shows how bad Sega's advertising must have been in the US to not.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because the Saturn wasn't, obviously it came out in the UK, but it was an also-ran, it was available, you know, it was in your face kind of thing. You knew that it existed. You know.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I mean, I'm exactly the same thing. I mean, I had a Mega Drive, and then never heard anything from the Saturn. It wasn't until years later that I got one.
I mean, I was a Saturn owner at the time.
Well, let's be honest here, guys. Yeah. Let's be honest with you. If you didn't know about the Sega Saturn in Japan, Sagata Sanshiro would come and judo flip you on your head. Like, that's how that
is the best advertising campaign, I think, bar none. Like, just how creative that was. For people, potentially people who don't know about this series, there was a character in Japan named Sagata Sanshiro, and he would, you know, do things like he would show up on a baseball field, kids are playing baseball, and he would, you know, be like, have you played the new baseball game for the Saturn? And they'd be like, no, and he'd beat the crap out of them and then make them play the game. And you're just, and after that, he's like, stop playing real baseball, play ours. Like, it was just the best campaign ever. I don't think I would fly anywhere else, but props to him. Mad respect for the ballsiness of that campaign.
I think just to bring it back around to the Dreamcast, I think the Japanese campaign with the president of Sega was pretty inventive as well. You know, where he was, mm-hmm. He was having these nightmares, and his wife was like trying to comfort him and stuff. And
didn't his face appear on one of the consoles? The box of indeed, one of the consoles they sold as well.
Yep, I've got it in the other room.
I've got that in my closet.
Hey, high five!
I've got one coming in the post next week. So
score.
Yeah, so that's six consoles now, right?
Yeah, but Adam's probably got more than me, so I'm okay.
Are we talking Dreamcast?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I like got 24 of them, something like what? That. That's ridiculous. Dude, do you have any idea how common those are over here? Especially a few years ago? Like, you could Goodwill rescue those things for nothing. So that's what I was doing all the time, and I just never got rid of them. Because, you know, hoarders. There's a fine line between collecting and hoarding. In case the world goes up, I got Dreamcast.
How many Sega Sports Dreamcasts have you got?
Two.
Man, I'd kill for one of those.
I know. Disappointing. I'm sorry.
The Sega Sports one, is that the black
one?
It
is, one? Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Mm. Yep.
It's the only limited edition we got over here.
Yeah.
Did you guys one?
We didn't get any in the UK.
No, we didn't get any limited editions, did we? They were all Japanese, weren't they? You had the Hello Kitty one, you had the Resident Evil one. There's so many in Japan.
Yeah, I don't have like any of those, dude. I was at one point I was considering it, and then I was just like, I really prefer not selling my car to get a Dreamcast. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just because it's painted red or whatever, I was like, the hell with it.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that I saw in the stores a lot back in the day, obviously none of them have it now, is like the little clamshell things. Where you could take the guts out of the mm-hmm. Dreamcast and then just put it in like a see-through yellow thing. Mm-hmm. Like I saw that a little bit. I don't know if that was an import or whether that was actually released in the US or not.
From what I understand, that was something that at the time EB Games, aka now I think GameStop, did briefly, where you could just buy that and replace it. Because Sega, which they were always weird, you could open up their consoles and it wouldn't void your warranty. So they didn't mind if you swap stuff out. So it was kind of like, I don't think Sega made those. I think EB Games did, but it was almost like, hey, you want to buy a replacement Mad Catz controller or a replacement color case for your console? You could just do that.
Yeah, because the replacement color cases don't have a Dreamcast sticker on them. You have to take the one off your existing console lid and then stick it onto your colored shell. So yeah, I mean, I'd like one of those as well. I think the only person that is selling them that ships to the UK though is actually in Peru or something like that. And he wants
that's
like $68 for postage. So I'm like,
Jeep.
Yeah, and it's got like a delivery time of about 4 months. So I think I'll pass.
That's good. That's good.
Is it coming by whale?
I spoke to somebody on your Facebook, Korlik. I'm not sure if it was you or if it was somebody else, but they gave me the heads up that the people that do the Hanzo VGA box are going to be coming out with a new model sometime soon.
Well, first of all, if it wasn't me, I don't know if you're talking about my Facebook fan page thing. I don't actually run that myself, so it wasn't me.
Wow, you have a fan page.
Well, no, it's my company's fan page, Figured Out Productions. All right. Cheap plug.
Yeah.
No, it's not actually run by me, but I didn't even know that, so definitely wasn't me.
Yeah,
that doesn't surprise me. Those guys are really talented. They keep coming up with new things. I like the Toro. That's the best one, I think.
I don't know the name of the new one, but they did say they'd give me a heads-up email when they're going to release them, and their website says that they are going to release them around end of June, maybe.
Do you know what's different about it?
No, I have no idea. As far as I know, it's an update of the Hanzo.
They did an update of the Hanzo. It was called the Toro. And the Toro was great because you had the VGA out, but you also had the optional RGB out, which you guys over in Europe, you guys know what that is. But over here, we never had that. but it's really useful for all the games that don't support VGA because it looks a lot better than S-Video. But you have to have special, either different, an imported TV or some sort of receiver box. Like I've got a scaler thing for it. It looks great. So I don't even know what the hell they could do beyond that, but if they've come up with something else, I'd love to know.
I think they're just going to make more.
Ah, well,
I'm not sure. They haven't had any to buy on their website in a while. So every time I go there.
Yeah, I know. My people in the comments are always bitching at me about that. You'd be amazed. People blame me. Like, they're out of stock. How come you told me to go buy it? I'm like, it's a video, you know?
That Adam Krahulik, he is always screwing up everything.
I'm fucking people up.
Adam, I just wanted to touch briefly on something that you mentioned in the video that you did with Rich from ReviewTech USA.
You guys keep saying quickly and let's hurry along. Are you guys in a rush or something?
No, not at all. No, it's just force of habit.
Take your time. I'm not going anywhere, man. I'm here. What's up?
You were talking about sort of Bernie Stolar and his sort of impact on the Dreamcast and that kind of thing, and really how the Dreamcast kind of failed. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and your opinions of him?
First, I will say that I don't mind taking my time. I mean, that the video Rich and I did was supposed to be like 10 minutes originally. So shit happens.
Yeah.
All right. So, and on to the actual subject about Bernie Stolar. I mean, other than what I said there, there's not really much to add. I mean, that guy, he did an amazing job with the Dreamcast, but he truly botched the Saturn. And I think that's really what, part of the reason, like what you were saying before about how we never saw the Saturn really walking around here in North America. Yeah. It's just, it wasn't common. I think he just wanted it to go away so that he could move on.
Wasn't his comment, the Saturn is not our future, or something along those
lines? He said that in 1998, the Saturn is not our future. And of course, the instant reaction from everybody is like, well, why am I going to buy one then?
Yeah.
It's still considered one of the dumbest moments in gaming history. It might actually be the dumbest.
Well, it's just like, I don't understand how the whole, you know, no support for RPGs. Like, that's just so weird.
That was directly him. He even says it in interviews. He's like, I don't think that people want them. I didn't bring them over. And like, the few that came over was just kind of in spite of him. Like, someone else kind of forced him to do it, you know?
Yeah.
The Saturn was such a mess. I love it, but it was a disaster.
Did you not get any RPGs then on the Saturn in the US?
We got some of them. I think we got more than you guys got. We got one of the Shining Forces, Shining Wisdom.
Shining Wisdom.
Yeah, we got the other Shining.
Turn the Holy
Out. How was it? Shit, yeah, we got that. We got Dragon Force.
Oh, the Albert Odyssey one, which is actually really fun.
Yeah, we didn't get that.
No, we didn't get that one. No.
Yeah, well, a lot of the Working Designs ones we got. I don't remember offhand the others, but yeah, we got more than you guys, but like we got a drop in the bucket compared to Japan.
Oh yeah, Japan knows.
Oh, we got that weird port of like the Highlight. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Virtual Highlight. Yeah.
Well, that's awful.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's so weird. You're running around hitting trees. Mm-hmm. It's just such a weird perspective.
I don't know if you guys heard, but someone just completed an English translation of Dragon Force 2 for the Saturn.
Oh, nice!
Totally, fully playable in English.
That's excellent. I have Dragon Force 1.
Yeah, well, now you can play the Saturn.
That would be so interesting.
Yeah. Just wanted people to know it exists.
Yeah, there's so many translations that I was looking forward to. Like the there was the one for that one survival horror game for the Dreamcast. And there was just a bunch of others that I don't think ever got finished.
Yeah, very few ever do. As far as the Dreamcast, the only one I could think of that ever got finished was Fire Pro Wrestling D. It's the only one that comes to mind.
I have a Fire Pro Wrestling game signed by Mankind.
That's random.
Yeah. I've got nice. Giant Gram, but I can't play it because I don't know what I'm doing because it's all in Japanese, obviously. But it's a nice looking game. It's better than the WWF game, Royal Rumble.
What about Attitude?
Oh, that stinks.
You guys hated Attitude, didn't you? I heard that on one of the podcasts.
Yeah, it wasn't. Well, we put a poll up on the Facebook page, and it was basically people voting for which were the worst games on the Dreamcast, and Attitude came up quite high. I think the eventual winner was Spirit of Speed 1937. Is that one you didn't get in the US?
No, we got that.
Did you? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It is considered at the bottom.
Yeah,
it is a terrible game.
LJN's last game.
Oh, is it?
Well, all right. So, who was the company that bought LJN? It was Activision, right? I think. Let's just, for argument's sake, let's just say it was Activision. I think it was. They were the ones making the game, and then I'm sure they realized it was bad and they just threw LJN's name on it. So they didn't ruin their own reputation. And that was the last thing I think LJN ever had anything to do with. Because prior to that, they hadn't released anything in like 6 years or something.
That's brilliant.
And I'm sure it was for that exact reason. It was like, look, this game's terrible. We'll just get it out there. We'll put LJN's name on it. Nobody will be associated with Activision. It happens. It's a standard company policy. If you're like a major conglomerate, if you don't want to ruin your name with a product, but you still want to make money on it, you just put a different company you own, put their name on it.
We're going to try and keep this to like under an hour, this podcast. So I just thought I'd ask about your thoughts on that sort of the final days of the Dreamcast and when it was all coming to an end. Do you think Sega could have kept it going?
Depends on our starting point. Like, you're saying just history the way it was and just they just kept going anyway despite hemorrhaging?
Yeah, I mean...
Or are you saying, like, what moments would we change or something?
Well, that's an interesting point, actually. I mean, the reason I ask is because, again, going back to your video with Rich, you spoke briefly about the SNK Neo Geo and how it was a system that has such a long lifespan, even though nobody was buying the games and they were just putting games out, you know, going, oh, here you go, here's another game. Up until, like, was it 1990? Mm-hmm. Was it, like, 2008 or something?
2004.
Yes. I mean, so...
And I only found out recently the only reason it stopped was because Playmore bought SNK.
Right.
And they were like, we can stop this now. Because I guess SNK had no reason to actually stop it until then.
Yeah, but, I mean, if Sega had that similar... outlook and thought, right, well, we've got this massive installed user base anyway, why not just keep, you know, making games? Because the thing that annoys me about the Dreamcast is they had such a short lifespan, and if we'd gotten maybe to like year 4 or 5, who knows what, you know, where the system could have gone.
I'll tell you what I think really did them in if we're focusing just on Dreamcast's immediate history.
Yeah.
I think it was like in 2000, it was some gaming convention. I don't remember who it was, but somebody asked some Sega employee about, you know, upcoming plans, and he said something about how they weren't currently producing new models because they had too many in stock or something like that.
Okay.
Do you guys remember that at all? And then our clickbait media ran with that as Sega to stop producing consoles, which was true, but they hadn't gone public with that yet. And then suddenly that story spiraled and it made everything get worse and then people stopped buying the consoles and then they just kind of slowly shut down. I remember them announcing they were discontinuing the console like a good 6 months before they actually did.
Yeah.
And I don't think we were meant to know that. I think if they had just – that had never happened and they just kept held on for a little while longer, you would have at least held out until late 2001 when we would have seen Grand Theft Auto 3 on there, which could have really changed things. Like, really changed
was
things.
Was that meant to be coming to the Dreamcast?
Yeah, that was... I don't know. It wasn't supposed to be an exclusive. I think it was going to be on PS2 as well, but it was coming to the Dreamcast.
Wow.
Along with...
That would have been huge.
Along with the earliest version of Halo, believe it or not.
I heard that. Yeah, yeah.
Although that version of Halo was like an RTS. It was nothing like the Halo that we eventually knew.
Yeah.
I think it could have played out differently if they had held on longer. If they had just not talked to that one fucking reporter, then I think a lot of things would have changed.
Yeah, also, too, I think the hype machine on the PS2 would have died down a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because people were kind of thinking that was the second coming when it was basically just a decent console.
Be careful how you phrase that, because people go insane when you talk, when you say anything even remotely negative about the PS2. The hate that comes at you is out of control.
Well, there's nothing negative about it.
Yeah, I know, but no, you already said, you know, something. Just... You said it was okay, so now people are going to go nuts. Trust me, I'm telling you.
That's fine.
I did a video on the PS2. I was like, yeah, it was pretty good. It was just I didn't like it as much as these other consoles. You fucking asshole! it gets out of control. So I like the PS2. It's fine. I got nothing against it. I just prefer
others. I think it's
others.
an excellent. It's an excellent example of like what happens when a console is just given support for a while. It's gets some really amazing games during its last cycle.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm. It's interesting. It's really telling that when you look back through the later issues of Dreamcast magazines, you get in all the news pages, it's just, oh, this game's cancelled. Now that game's cancelled. This game's cancelled. And it's just like, if these games had come out and, you know, the ball hadn't stopped rolling because Sega hadn't said, oh, we're stopping. If they just kind of let it continue and let it progress naturally and see what happened, maybe we could be in a different world. No.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, it's probably at that time developers thought, well, it is game over. We're going to do PS2 instead. And that's where the concentration was at that point, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So in hindsight, it's always going to be what if.
Yeah. But at least we get the independent stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Now, did you kickstart the Pure Solar?
Yeah, I backed that. for sure.
Yeah. Can't wait for that. That's just an interesting concept of, like, you don't have to have, like, I mean, people love games like the old RPGs, and it's just like, I don't understand why people don't make more of those. Just make another RPG in that style, and you can have it a wide release on everything.
Well, Pure Solar is.
It's a hugely popular on the Mega Drive, isn't it? It's had numerous releases and re-releases.
And all sorts of digital releases. Yep.
Yeah, it's on the Xbox One as well now. You can get it from the Xbox One. So
it's just odd. There's just not more of those out there, because it seems like a real, like, I don't know. Maybe it's just a lot of work putting that much, like, you know, effort into, like, a proper old school RPG type thing.
Probably, because I don't know if the returns are ever going to be worth it. I mean, if that was the case, then I would think Pure Solar wouldn't be getting essentially an upgrade over the Genesis Mega Drive version. It would be a whole new game. I think it's just a lot of work that independent developers don't necessarily have the funding for.
Yeah, I think if it was easy, then I think more people would do it. But unfortunately,
yeah,
probably too much effort for most developers, isn't it?
It's going to be interesting to see where gaming goes, because you got a lot of AAA titles that are oversaturating the market and people are getting kind of sick of them. But then you got a lot of these indie, you know, movements like spiritual successors and stuff. And yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about, like that ukulele thing and Mighty Number 9 and what's that new Castlevania?
Bloodstained. Yeah, they got me with that. I'm like, I'm replaying Symphony of the Night on my PS3. I'm just sticking my old PS1 thing in there and just playing it like that. And they got me that because there's so much like little like independent marketing of that Kickstarter where like all these people are playing Castlevania games. And it's like, oh man, it's got me excited about that.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see where things will go, because the major developers don't really do stuff like that anymore because they have to make a crap ton of money on every game. And if they don't, they could literally kill their company. I mean, look at all the major developers that we've lost over the past few years. THQ, now Konami, Capcom's basically at death's door, Sega's basically gone, all because they made like one or two games that didn't become huge hits. It's a weird time.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope, like, smaller, you know, people that are making games, like, the people that are making Don't Starve, like, they seem to be putting so much work into Don't Starve Together beta, and it's like they're putting so much work in, and it's like they're not actually, I don't think they're making the maximum amount of profit they could off of it. It's weird. It's like, I want them to, like, succeed, and I'm cool with paying money for it, but they seem to be giving away stuff for much less money than I would think. I don't know.
I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, it does take a lot for an indie game to be successful in today's market, because the big money is always in the triple A's. But it can happen. It really can happen. I've seen it.
Yeah, Minecraft.
Well, going back to Minecraft, there was another game called Fortress Craft that came out later, and that was a hugely popular game because it was the right game at the right time. And that's what, I mean, with indie games, that's what you need. You need a bit of a look.
You cracked the code. You need the word craft in the title.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'll go around the table real quick, and everybody can let us know what they're working on right now and what their contact information is on the interwebs. We will start with our special guest, Adam Corley.
Hey, how you doing? All right, so if you want to follow me, you can follow me on youtube.com/AdamCorley, or you can follow me on my website, figuredoutproductions.com. I've been doing a lot of videos, as per usual, and I will continue to do that. And hopefully I will be able to make more episodes of Keep Dreaming. It's always better if you have new hardware.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some new videos. That should be really cool.
I'm hoping that the Dreamcast USB thing comes out soon, because that'd be fun to do a video about.
Excellent. Tommy, what's going on with you?
Obviously, I'm Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at TomLeesey. And if you go to the Dreamcast Junkyard Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Dreamcast Junkyard, and write something, the person who responds is usually me, so you can get me on there as well.
Yeah, anyone can post. So.
Yeah, also, yeah, we do have the group as well, so you can go on there. It's just facebook.com/groups/Dreamcast Junkyards or something.
All right, Gaz.
I'm on Twitter mainly, at Lost Ruin, all one word. That's basically it.
And you, Caleb?
I still don't remember my Twitter name. It might be my name. I don't know. If for some reason anybody wants to talk to me, they can just get me on the Dreamcast Junkyard Facebook site, as Tom previously mentioned.
Man, the confidence here just really fell. What's up?
If you guys want to follow me, you can check me out on Twitter, I guess.
Oh, like, come on, guys.
People probably don't.
I don't even remember my name. You'll find it. I don't even care.
I don't know. I don't care. I don't want any friends. I don't care.
All right. Well, I hope you all enjoyed DreamPod number 5, the American version, as the good folks in the USA came by and we showed those limey Brits over in the UK.
The phrase.
What
you were
going to
say? Quote, limey Brits. I was like, he's going to say it. Bam.
Remember to tune in next time, where normal service will be resumed, and you will hear my voice, my dulcet tones,
and the and the national anthem. Yeah, God Save the Queen.
You'll hear a lot less cursing.
Yeah, we're so polite.
Yeah, you guys are. I'm not.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for listening.
Cool and groovy.
Thank you, everybody.
See you next week, folks.
Bye.
Please stop this disc now.